The current policy of developing the export-orientated economy in the coastal areas has stimulated the Shanghai people's desire to head off for foreign parts. And, according to the Shanghai-based Jiefang Daily, the best way for them to do this is to engage in business or provide labor and technical services to other countries. Shanghai has too many people chasing too few jobs, so this surplus labor force could solve the labor shortages which exist in some other parts of the world. Workers' monthly wages abroad can be 100 times what they are in China, although the cost of living is likely to be much higher in some countries. Furthermore, while working overseas, the Chinese workers would get the chance to learn advanced technology and to become entrepreneurs and specialists, thus promoting trade and economic cooperation between China and other countries. Jiefang Daily suggests local authorities should take the following measures to promote exports of labor. Set up labor service groups to undertake contractual projects abroad. Shanghai workers have taken part in many overseas projects in the past, such as construction of railways, factories, and other buildings. With their high reputation, they would be a force to be reckoned with on the world labor market. Establish employer-employee introduction offices. Drivers, repairmen, nurses, housemaids, hairdressers, cooks and workers involved in gardening and construction are in great demand in many countries, and these offices could provide training and act as a bridge between employers and employees. Encourage people to look for jobs themselves. As many Shanghai residents have relatives overseas, they could easily get help in finding work abroad. Promote cooperation between the state and individuals. If local people are encouraged to work abroad, workers with special skills would flow out of the country, thus creating a brain drain. To solve the problem, consideration must be given to both state and private interests. When workers go abroad at their own expense, the enterprises they work for should give them favorable treatment when they return. While working overseas, the workers should help their enterprises open up to the world market. Shanghai residents have strong aspirations to expand their living space, and they are good at trading. But first priority should be given to entrepreneurs who are brave enough to journey out into the world and build success. Before the founding of New China, a number of world-renowned figures, such as shipping magnate Pao Yuekang and the computer king Wang An, were raised in Shanghai. It is expected that a group of new magnates will emerge when Shanghai entrepreneurs enter the world economy. Now that Shanghai is capable of building 100,000-ton class vessels and manufacturing sophisticated precision building machines, powerful generators, color televisions, and bicycles, there is no reason why the city could not create a group of world-class shipping kings, building machine kings, and bicycle kings. With a solid industrial foundation and technical force, Shanghai could also set up factories and shops overseas to compete with foreign counterparts. Shanghai-made brands, very popular at home now, will surely capture a slice of the world market if sales promotion is emphasized. Shanghai produces quality cloth shoes of good workmanship, but its exports are $1.1 billion annually, only half of Taiwan's total, due to the neglect of sales promotion overseas. Shanghai boasts numerous specialists in the fields of science, technology, culture, and education. These experts could earn a good deal of foreign exchange for the state if technical services were offered to countries that badly need skilled workers in high-tech industries. The city can also directly export technology and software and contract scientific research projects abroad, as it possesses advantages in the fields of laser, optical fiber, microelectronics, and biological engineering technology.
Lesson 4. Does criticism do more harm than good to people? Text. A young woman who fears compliments. Maria, a brilliant graduate student in her early 20s who came for consultation, insisted that she could improve only with criticism. Her reasoning was that she knew the good qualities, but that she did not know the bad ones. To have more knowledge of her negative qualities, she believed, would add to her self-understanding and thus enable her to see herself more completely. Maria, in effect, refused to acknowledge and to understand her strengths. She had assembled detailed lists of her negative qualities, which she used daily to support an extremely negative view of herself, but they were either exaggerated or unreal. Despite her attractiveness to others, she convinced herself that she was ugly. When her family bought her new and well-designed articles of clothing, she seldom bought any herself. She left them hanging in the closet for weeks before wearing them once. When someone complimented her on what she wore and asked whether it was new, she could honestly answer no. She did not deserve to wear new clothes. She could not bear the pain of hearing compliments, of seeing herself as intelligent, pretty, or worthwhile. As a child, Maria had received little or no criticism from her parents. She was prized by them. Their major disappointment in her, apparently, was that she often rejected their overtures of kindness and appreciation, not in anger, but in embarrassment, as though she were undeserving. This seemingly mild-mannered young woman, exceptionally courteous and considerate to others, held on to her own negative self-judgment with tenacity. Finally, friends and interested faculty members quit acceding to her persuasive requests for criticism that they could not honestly give. Instead, they gently but firmly confronted her with her own blindness to what she truly was like.
2. Read. Read the following passages. Underline the important viewpoints while reading. 1. Unfair criticism. Stuart is a typical 16-year-old boy who experienced and suffered from the criticism of an alcoholic parent. It seemed to Stuart the only thing his father ever had to say to him was, "You haven't got a brain in your head." Stuart was a sophomore in high school. It was true he was a poor student, or what his dean called an underachiever. Even though Stuart knew he was an underachiever, he would have liked to hear his father say, just once, something else when he brought home his report card, other than his usual, "You haven't got a brain in your head." Stuart was determined to prove to his father he did have a brain in his head. Stuart studied very hard. Some nights, it was difficult for him to concentrate on his homework, because he could hear his parents bickering in the next room. "You forgot to pay the mortgage again. The bank is fed up." "How many times can a person smash up a car? I'm surprised they haven't taken your license away." "If you wouldn't drink so much." Stuart didn't like the bickering, and wondered if his parents might separate. He wondered, too, because his father was so forgetful about paying the bills, if they might lose their home. He kept telling himself that if he studied hard, maybe, by some miracle, things would get better at home. Stuart's determination to concentrate on his school work, in spite of the bickering and worries at home, paid off. His next report card showed a marked improvement. There was even a personal note of praise from his dean written on the report card. Proudly, Stuart put the report card on his father's desk. Stuart felt happier than he had felt in a long time. He knew that his father could only be pleased with such a report. But more important, maybe now his father would realize that he was intelligent and would start paying some attention to him. Stuart could remember when his father used to go to ball games and movies with him. Who knew, maybe things would go back to the way they used to be. Stuart would offer to get a part-time job to help pay off some of the bills. He thought that might lessen some of the arguing at home and keep the family from breaking up. He would let his father know that he was old enough to understand things weren't always easy at the office. When Stuart's father came home and saw the report, he said without any hesitation, "Well, well, who did the work for you? I know you don't have the brains to do it." Stuart was stunned. All that work for nothing. He wouldn't be surprised if his father not only thought he was stupid, but hated him too. Stuart would not have been as hurt if he had only known his father was tied up in his own miserable feelings. This kept him from recognizing what Stuart had accomplished in school.
2. Uses of criticism. While some of us have a tendency to disbelieve or to minimize the good things people say about us, others among us have a tendency to hold a protective web around ourselves in defense against criticism. One workshop participant said, "I confuse the issue by getting logical in the face of threatening reactions. Sometimes I act helpless, so others will stop the criticism." Early in the workshop experience, he had received more negative than positive reactions. While he was fearful of criticism, he found that he had courted it, hoping that he could learn how to handle it and overcome his fear. We may court negative reactions for other reasons. A therapy group member regarded criticism as more useful than compliments, and criticism is what he often got. Not because he asked for it directly, but because of his detached manner, as though he were sitting in judgment of others. Moreover, his tendency to qualify and hedge his opinions and feelings until they had no meaning often brought down the ire of others upon him. He gave the impression of accepting their displeasure stoically, as though it strengthened him. He never openly criticized other members, however. Still another member, who claimed that criticism is the stuff that we grow on, gave others' criticism galore so they could improve and, in his words, not appear in a negative light in the future. This member came across as using his ostensible concern for the growth of others as an excuse to criticize and attack them.
3. Is it right to withhold one's reactions to others? It is not uncommon for us to withhold our reactions to others. We may hold back compliments for fear of embarrassment to them and to ourselves. We may hold back criticism for fear of being disliked or considered unfair, or for fear of hurting another person. Reactions given inconsiderately may indeed hurt others. On the other hand, some of us are inclined to withhold our reactions from others, while at the same time we honestly prefer that they not hold back theirs from us. We may have two different rules. The first one may be, if we ask others for candid reactions to our behavior, to something we have done or plan to do, we want them to tell us straight, including the negative with the positive. The second rule may be, if someone else asks us for similar reactions, we are inclined to hold back or gloss over the negative and embroider the positive.
4. Criticism is a kind of demand on those criticized. As children, many of us got a great deal of criticism and, as a result, learned a variety of patterns for coping with it. Maria had apparently received little criticism, but, knowing that she was not perfect and deserved what other children got, developed her own patterns of self-judgment and censure. Being judged, whether we are underestimated or overestimated, usually implies a demand, subtle or direct, that we change. If others do not demand change, we may feel the need to demand it of ourselves. Reactions that are relatively free from attempts to change or discredit us, given by someone who cares for us, and with the intention of letting us know what impressions we are making, may be easier to take. If, however, our usual reaction is to defend ourselves, even mild criticism or impressions given gently without demands that we change may play havoc with our defensive structure and become difficult to handle.
5. How to handle criticism. The surgeon reached over and jerked the syringe out of the nurse's hand. "Jane, that's the sloppiest injection I've ever seen," he snapped. Quickly, his fingers found the vein she had been searching for. Cheeks burning, Jane turned away. 10 years later, Jane's voice still trembles when she relates the experience. Some of our male co-workers have it easier. They grew up encouraged to play team sports, and they had to handle a coach's yells when they dropped the ball. Now they can see that a goof on the job is like dropping the ball in football. The fumble is embarrassing, but you take it in stride and go on. But for most women, the path to success was different. As girls, we grew up wanting to be popular. We were praised for what we were, not for what we did. So our reaction to criticism is often, someone doesn't like me, I fail to please, I am a failure. I get defensive, says Rhonda, a teacher, when someone criticizes me. Suddenly, I'm a little girl again, being scolded, and I want to make excuses. I want to explain that it's not my fault, it's someone else's, or I want to hide and cry.
6. Take a tactful approach. How about giving criticism? The old, I want to be like syndrome can make it as hard to give criticism as to take it. Karen thinks she's found the answer. 2 weeks after I was promoted to first-line supervisor, she remembers, I had to tell a friend that she was in trouble for not turning in her weekly reports on time. My boss suggested that I tell Judy I didn't want to fix the blame. I just wanted to fix the problem. That was wonderful advice. It allowed me to state the problem objectively to Judy, and she offered the solution. Criticism in the workplace, whether you're giving it or getting it, is always more effective when you focus on the task rather than on the person. Fixing the problem, not the blame, means that nobody has to feel chewed out or chewed up. We can still feel whole and learn something in the process.
Lesson 5. Is it good for students to have part-time jobs? Text. School part-timers. More and more high school students in Beijing are turning their minds to ways of making money. They are capitalizing on opportunities, such as one group of students who went to the front gate of the Children's Center in the East District of Beijing when a film studio was there conducting auditions. The group sold the young hopefuls application forms at 5 fen apiece after getting the forms from the center for free. Young entrepreneurs are also capitalizing on high-demand commodities, not always available away from the big shopping centers. Birthday or greeting cards are an example. One department store estimated that 80% of its sales of cards are to students for resale. Xiao Li, a junior high school student at Fengtai District in the southwest region of the capital, spent 40 yuan buying cards from downtown shops just before the last spring festival. She sold them at her school and schools nearby at prices 15 to 20% higher than what she had paid. In a month, she earned 100 yuan, representing a 250% return on her initial investment. A senior high school student who had been selling cards has now become an amateur wholesale dealer. His wholesale price is 8% higher than his purchasing price and 10% lower than the retail price. Within 2 months, he had earned several hundred yuan in profits. Many students have merged their activities to avoid price wars. For example, in an area with few state-owned shops and far from the city center, student union heads from the schools there have reached an agreement on card prices. The agreement says prices may be higher than at the downtown shops, but lower than at the peddler's stalls. Card selling is just a beginning. Some students turn their eyes to other, more profitable ventures. Take one senior high school sophomore who has developed a flourishing business selling photos of famous people. He even has his own name card that reads, the High School Student Corporation Limited of exploitation of new technology. The student carries a portfolio of the photos around with him in an album to show his young customers. He offers a wide variety of photos, from American movie star Sylvester Stallone in Rambo pose to Taiwan's famous singer Qi Qin. "These all depend on my high-quality camera," he boasts, and explains how he clipped the pictures from magazines, photographed them, and then developed the prints into various sizes. He has sold hundreds. Another student is now an amateur salesman for a company and earns a 3% commission on each sale. When he had earned 300 yuan through his own efforts, he said, "I feel that I have really become an adult." Most of the money the students earn is spent on themselves. They can buy high-priced items like a pair of running shoes, which can cost as much as 100 yuan, a month's salary for an average worker. Few parents can afford such luxuries. Some students find work to help them realize their dreams of a career. Qian Qian wants to become an actress. In her spare time, she attends a class outside school that costs 80 yuan a month in tuition, an amount which her parents cannot afford to pay. So she found a job as a waitress in a coffee house to earn her tuition fee. Some students get into business for other reasons besides the money. Zhou Yue, a female student from a fairly wealthy family, took a job because, she said, business can cultivate a sense of competition, which is very important for us in the future. A student who once sold cards said young people are encouraged to be independent. "But how?" he asked. "You can never be independent unless you can support yourself financially." He felt after-school work enhanced a young person's social development too. Practical experience in the workforce has been stipulated by the State Commission of Education as a compulsory program. This is now closely related with economic benefits amongst high school students. One student, sent by her school to work as a shop assistant at a temple fair, earned 5 yuan a day for a 7-hour shift behind the counter. "I had a sore throat after working for a few days, but I had to hold on," she said. "I wanted to earn the money and also prove that I was an able girl." These temporary job stints give high school students an insight into what work and incomes are all about. A job at a state-owned cinema may only earn a worker 40 or 50 yuan a month, but a job with a self-employed trader may earn the assistant 8 or 10 yuan a day. A writer may get about 20 yuan for an article in a newspaper or a magazine, but a clothes keeper in a swimming pool may earn at least 200 yuan a month.